Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. And together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, the 27th day of June, 2023. Hope your day's going well. Our radio program started 12 and a half years ago, broadcasting in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030, Tucson's trusted voice for news and talk, KVOI. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. The Buckmaster Show live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Well, as many of us know all too well, that Tucson is a community known for very high rates of non-melanoma skin cancers. With us on the live line is Dr. Mark Epstein, the founder of Mountain View Dermatology. Dr. Epstein and his team this summer have introduced Southern Arizona's first availability of the most advanced non-surgical treatment for common non-melanoma skin cancer. Dr. Epstein, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
Tell me a little bit about what's going on here. Tell me about this new therapy. What's it involve?
It uses a superficial X-ray that's guided by ultrasound to delineate the tissue underneath the skin, and then the radiation is applied. The cancer cells get destroyed, and there is no bleeding, no surgery, patient doesn't have to undergo any reconstructive surgery as well.
Well, it sounds almost too good to be true, Dr. Epstein. When did this surgery come up, or this non-surgical technology, when did this come about, and why are we just now getting it here in Tucson?
Well, first there was just a superficial radiation therapy, and then when they linked it to ultrasound so they could see the tumor underneath the skin, their cure rates became as high as cure rates for melanoma. It's on par with Mohs, micrographic surgery. So now the two have the highest cure rates that are available, and so it's been available for over the last few years, but the machines are relatively expensive, and it takes a while to introduce them to different communities.
What type of skin cancer are we talking about that this is effective with?
Okay, so the two most common types of skin cancer are non-melanoma types. And that's basal cell carcinoma, which is the majority, and then squamous cell carcinoma.
So could you walk us through what this process, you know, how much time does it take, the preparation? Kind of walk us through, Dr. Epstein, what's involved with this laser technology.
Well, it's not a laser. It's radiation. Like radiation if you go in for an X-ray, but it's been tailored to treat the skin. So it by directing it very carefully, it only destroys the tumor cells, and the surrounding healthy skin doesn't get hurt. And it first they need to have a biopsy, and it has to meet certain criteria, and to be it can't be too big. Otherwise, the superficial radiation won't work. And then once it meets, patient meets that criteria, they do a biopsy. You have to see if the insurance company covers it. And then the actual treatment, they come in a radiology technician who's stationed in my office. I have a dedicated room for this that had to be lead lined special lines put in it so that they could handle the radiation. They come in and they sit down in a very comfortable chair, and the the lesion is evaluated, it's marked down for the treatment. They make they cut out a piece of lead to protect the surrounding tissue, and then about 2 to 3 times a week for about 20 treatments, they have the radiation is dispensed. The radiation itself only takes about less than a minute to do. The rest of the time, it's documenting it, seeing how the patient's feeling, and so it's very easy for the patient to tolerate. They just need to come into the office about 20 times.
So 20 times over how long? A couple of weeks?
About 7 weeks.
7 weeks.
If they need to go into a vacation or something comes up, we can adjust the treatments for them. But at the end of the treatment, there's been no surgery, and there's no need to repair anything. Mm-hmm. And the cure rates, as I said, are as high as with melanoma micrographic surgery, but without the surgery.
Were people going up to Phoenix for this type of surgery or for this type of treatment?
Yes, this is the first one in southern Arizona. I had waited for one of the other bigger multi-dermatology groups to pick it up, and when they didn't do that, I thought it's time that it be introduced into southern Arizona. So before then, they would have to go up to Phoenix to get this type of treatment.
Do you have like a franchise? Are you like the exclusive office for this? Yeah.
No. I just thought it was, it's because we're looking for other ways to treat skin cancer that the patients are able to handle it easier.
Sure.
As we get older, our tolerance for discomfort and is less, and this is a way to do that. So it's the first time we have something that has as high a cure rate as Mohs, which has been the benchmark for treatment.
Yeah, so the insurance companies, are they on board with this, or are they just coming around to it?
No, actually, Medicare, which is kind of the gold standard, and they evaluate things very critically because they don't want to add things that don't work and be wasteful. So they have approved what's called IGSRT, and that stands for image-guided, that's the ultrasound. SRT is superficial radiation therapy. So they've not only approved the radiation part of it, but also the image-guided portion. And a lot of the other insurances have agreed to that. One of the problems we're having is that the Advantage plans that a lot of people are taking in place of Medicare, they have decided not to follow Medicare guidelines, and they don't pay for the image-guided ones. And when that happens, not to deny the patient, will waive the image-guided fees.
Okay. So where can people find out more, Dr. Epstein? What's your website?
So it's Epstein, Epstein, derm.com.
Okay, and you're at Mountain View Dermatology. What part of town are you in?
We're catty corner to Tucson General Medical Center, rather. So we're on Grant and Wyatt, a block west of Craycroft.
Oh, yeah, I know. All those, a lot of doctor's offices in there. On Wyatt Drive, yeah. Okay. Dr. Epstein, thank you very much. Sounds pretty exciting. Good stuff. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Dr. Mark Epstein, founder of Mountain View Dermatology, talking about Southern Arizona's first availability of this very advanced non-surgical treatment for common skin cancers. We're not talking about melanoma here, though. These are the non-melanoma skin cancers that unfortunately are all too common. We'll take a break right here. Shelley Fishman with me in studio. Shell, what is it? Two thumbs up day. Okay. We'll hear from Shelley right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Mr. Shelley Fishman. Shell, it's been quite a while since I've seen you do two thumbs up.
On a Tuesday.
We've had some pretty miserable Tuesdays. Last week was kind of it was a down week, but it looks like we got a good day going.
Well, you know, what's happening here is the market is reacting to stuff that's going on in the world. And so last week, even though it was a down week, it was really kind of a market regrouping and trying to recover some of its profit or cover some of the profits that it had taken, you know, earlier in the month. And today we got some nice news on inflation and also nice news on consumer attitudes toward consuming and buying stuff. And so that's been higher than it's been in the last 18 months.
I don't hear a lot of recession talk out there right now.
You know, somebody's going to pick it up
sure
and
they
say,
are.
Well,
yeah.
But clearly, all of the indications in even the more classical indications in macroeconomics are pointing toward a soft landing. You know, the Fed did exactly what we expected it to do a couple of weeks ago. They you know, gave us a slap on the wrist, said we're going to hold off on any rate increase this month, but there's going to be more in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see.
Well, Shell, let's talk a little bit about financial advisors. When you look at a financial, you say you've got an advisor, you're maybe not that happy with the direction. When is it time to maybe go a different way?
Well, clearly, one of the things that makes you want to look for a new advisor is you move.
Mm-hmm.
You move from one city
sure.
to another city, and so you'd rather not have a long-distance relationship with an advisor. That's one thing. The other thing is, for whatever reason, you're unhappy with the advisor you have. Now, that doesn't mean that's a bad advisor. It just means that the chemistry between you and that advisor has gone south. So one of the things I always tell people, and I get calls still, even though I'm mostly retired,
mm-hmm.
I get calls, and I got one this morning from somebody who found me, you know, found my website, found that I had been a CFP, and said, you know, are you taking clients? And I said, no, well then, you know, how should I look
mm-hmm.
for somebody? And,
mm-hmm.
and the first thing that I advise is if you're looking for a new advisor, don't skimp on the interviews. You know, make interviews with three different advisors, and make it easy for yourself, you know, in offices that are where you can get to easily. Two of the three, I think, and I'm prejudiced in this respect, two of the three ought to be CFPs. Now, being a CFP doesn't make you smarter than anybody else, doesn't make you better educated than everybody else. But it does do one thing that is very important. It means that the advisor is under written obligation to take a fiduciary role in the advice that he or she gives you. What is a fiduciary role? It means that the advisor must put his or her interests as subordinate to you, the client.
Mm.
Okay, now, there are lots of people who will say, we take a fiduciary responsibility, but then the question is, do I get that in writing?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it's still a loosey-goosey kind of thing, but it's a good idea, I think, to have one or two of the people you're interviewing being CFPs.
Certified financial planners. Who have to meet certain standards.
Oh, yeah,
and you've got to take a test.
Yes, and 6 months of classes and all of that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a better advisor than anybody else. So when you sit down with an advisor, there's a couple of things that you should look for. The first thing is, do you feel comfortable with that person? You need to be able to communicate openly, and this is the key, never feel intimidated. Because I've heard, well, you're the expert, I don't know anything.
Yeah, I don't know anything.
You know, it's like being intimidated by your doctor. Mm. Nonsense. They're the expert, you're the customer.
Yeah.
And
as the customer, you need to ask questions.
Clearly. And
whether it's medical or financial.
Right, even if those you know, questions might seem to you to be a little off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, it's your responsibility to yourself and your family
mm-hmm.
to make sure that you get your questions answered. The next thing is to ask for documentation. Now, what kind of documentation? Lots of people have, you know, published stuff that they will give their clients about where they got, you know, where they were educated, how long they've been in business. If they have any complaints against them, now you can. That's all public information. You could look it up on the web and get the name of the form is a U-4. But if you ask a person you're interviewing for their U-4 or their essentially resume, you know, they'll go into their drawer full of stuff and give you that. And it's because it's checkable. It's public information. You can believe what's down in writing.
You said U-4.
Yeah, that's a form that is filed with the
government
regulatory agencies,
okay.
Both the SEC and okay. There's one other. It's escaping me at the moment.
Okay, but it's called
a
U-4.
All right. But you can look that up online as well.
Okay.
The third thing is you have to know, and get this out of the way very, very quickly, how that advisor charges for his or her services. Now, there are several ways to charge for their services. You know, one way is to charge you a fixed percentage of the total assets under management. If you do a lot of trading, that's a great way to be charged because you don't pay for every trade. The other way to get charged is when you make trades. There are also some products that advisors will recommend from time to time to their clients that are commissionable to the advisor. You usually don't pay out of pocket as the client, but the advisor gets paid, and sometimes very richly, for selling those products.
So clearly these are products with a profit center for the advisor.
Clearly, they can be. Yeah. But again, if you trust the fact that you have hired a fiduciary, then those products might be the most appropriate thing for you, or in the mix, the most appropriate thing for you. And the kind of products I'm talking about here are mostly insurance products. They're life insurance. They can be annuity products. They can be long-term care insurance. They're things that you might, in fact, need and want to have part of the mix. But you should know that the advisor gets paid very nicely for selling those products. The other kind of product that's sometimes in the mix is third-party management products. Not all advisors do this, but there are third-party management firms who assemble expertise from different parts of the industry and offer management styles and management techniques that meld the advice from several third parties into a package that you can buy and mix and match. They charge for that, and you pay that right off the top. But it gives you a tremendous amount, I think, of confidence that you're getting teams of people who are doing research that you or your advisor could never do on your own. And now, does that guarantee that you're going to be a big winner? No. But it guarantees that you're going to get a whole bunch of expertise that you wouldn't ordinarily have. So that's some of the products you can get. One of the things I think is important, and you know, some of my friends kick me when I say this, is I like the idea that an advisor should be independent of any brand manufacturer. So if the advisor works for an insurance company or works for one of these big banks that do their own, mutual funds or
their own product line,
then you have to worry whether the advisor is being better compensated when they sell their own products rather than go outside and get other products. So you got to ask those questions and be very clear about the answers. Don't guess. In the initial interview with an advisor, the advisor at some point is going to stop you from asking questions and start asking questions of you. Very important that you level with the advisor. Let the advisor know why you're changing. Let the advisor know what your objectives are. Let the advisor know how often you want to meet with him or her, what your expectations of the relationship are. And if you're not getting good answers or answers that really satisfy you, you know, go to the next interview. Another thing that people don't think about, advisors are human beings. They go on vacation or they have, you know, their schedules are fully booked and you want to get in. So you need to know what the backup plan is, you know, who you can meet with at that advisor's
office.
Whether
they have somebody that they call upon.
Exactly. So very quickly, because I know that the time is short here, once you've chosen an advisor, then there's some steps you need to go through. One of those steps is you're going to be offered a detailed financial plan by that advisor, either something that they charge for, or they'll guide you to an online site that allows you to do the input and get a plan. Now, the plan is not a set of rules that you have to stick with necessarily, but the process of going through the input into a detailed financial plan is very, very useful. And I would never skip that.
How detailed should you go as the client into your particular investment portfolio with someone who you are interviewing, and you may not go with that person?
That's a great question, Bill. Talking generalities,
do not
get into very
your particular.
Specifics. These are very personal things.
Yes.
Once you have chosen an advisor, however, you know, you open up the kimono you know, do not hold back.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing to remember is when you're changing advisors, you may be selling stuff that you think hasn't been winners for you, and or you know, just changing from your prior advisor's strategies to the, you know, current advisor strategies. Be careful about tax impacts. If it's an IRA or 401k, then there's, you don't have to worry about that. But if it's a non-qualified account, that is a non-retirement designated account, there's going to be tax implications every time you buy and sell stuff.
Yep.
So be really careful about that. The other thing I always say is, remember, there is a monster on your shoulder whispering in your ear, and that monster is called greed. Be aware that greed is pushing your decisions, and you must avoid that.
Shelly Fishman, great advice. Thank you, Shell.
Great. Have a great week, Bill.
All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition. It's going to be a scorcher out there. Not quite as hot as yesterday. I think we topped out at 111 yesterday, maybe 109, 110. A couple of degrees cooler. Who knows the difference when you get into that kind of into the stratosphere of temperatures. This is a good time to go over to Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. And you may be wondering, well, Bill, why is it a good time if it's so hot? Well, it's probably this hot weather will usher in our rain, we hope. So this would be a good time to get some summer things into your garden, some summer color. Green Things, 13-acre site, is also the home of Zocalo and all that great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Their website, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They're in their 53rd year of business, and they are open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, which will be coming up here momentarily, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. Let's go now to a place that's hotter than Tucson, up to Phoenix in the Valley of the Sun. Will Humble is a longtime public health enthusiast. He's currently the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. More than 40 years, more than four decades in public health, including more than 20 years at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various roles, including the director there from 2009 to 2015. And did I add, we're also very pleased that Will is the Buckmaster Show contributor on public health, one of two dozen experts we call upon on a monthly basis with most. So, Will, how are you? How are you surviving the heat in Phoenix?
Well, I'm doing just fine. In fact, I'm still running my EVAP coolers.
What?
And I'm old school, yeah. And I'm looking at it right now. It's 73.
What?
In the house, yeah.
EVAP?
Oh, I still run EVAPs.
I thought...
Well, my goal is to make it till 4th of July.
Yeah. Then you switch over to air or what?
Yeah. Once my wife complains, that's when I have to switch.
Well,
and my daughter.
25 years or so, and we've been in town here 35. We did do the evaporative cooling, and it just didn't work. We didn't have the backup AC, so we gave up and went full into AC, but I've seen some statistics, at least I don't know what it is in Phoenix, but here in Tucson, Will, it's about 10% of the households here in Tucson are still cooling with the evaporative systems.
Yeah, there's probably not that percentage up here in Phoenix, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's still that way in Tucson. I grew up on 22nd and Wilmot down there, and that's all we had, you know, was EVAP back in those days.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I never remember being uncomfortable, but I was a kid.
Yeah. A couple of months ago, the New York Times, it may have been a front page story, and that research had showed that if the cooling system went out in Phoenix, in the Valley of the Sun, I don't know for how long, but they said it would be like a mass casualty event. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, well, their assumption was that the whole Metroplex would be out of power all at once.
Yes,
They were assuming 4.5 million houses, you know, go out all at once, a catastrophic load failure.
Yeah.
But, and we do have power outages just like you do in Tucson, but it's almost always related to a thunderstorm event. And so there's a transformer here or there that goes out and you have some neighborhoods that get out of power. So I read that story, but I just thought it would be super unreasonable to, you know, that to expect a full on outage like that. But what you have to plan for in public health is the things you expect to happen every summer, which is certain neighborhoods that go out. And that does create a problem, especially for example, my parents are both 90, 91. Like, we would bring them over here, right, if their house was out of power. And you got to have a plan for vulnerable people for just like regional outages. That's something that public health can plan for. I don't know how you'd plan for a summertime outage of 4.5 million people. I mean, I just don't, that would be catastrophic.
Well, when the story came out, I didn't bring it up with you in our monthly visits, but today was a good day to bring it up because when it goes over 110 here in Tucson, for certain people, certainly the unsheltered population, this then becomes a crisis, Will Humble.
Yeah. So the people that are at most risk right now, both Phoenix and Tucson, all in the southern deserts, and by the way, in Texas and all the other places that's so hot, and in Mexico, are people who don't have shelter. You know, that people don't have a place to cool off. And far and away, the people at our highest risk for, you know, going to an emergency department or dying are, you know, the unhoused, people without shelter. But they're not the only ones at risk. That's the highest risk in terms of rates. But we've done, back when I was in my old job at the state health department, we ran a bunch of statistics because we had the emergency department data and the death certificate data. And we did some analyses and found really that in Arizona, it's a fair piece different than the rest of the U.S. when it comes to who's at risk for heat-related illness, both emergency department admissions and also even deaths. Throughout the rest of the country, it tends to be split 50-50 men and women. Higher percentages of problems the older you get. In Arizona, it's 3-1 men that are at higher risk for ending up in an emergency department or dying from a heat-related illness. And primarily, it's guys who have outdoor occupations. So having an outdoor job, that's in a way you're unhoused in a sense for the middle of the day. So working as a roofer, a laborer, parks administrator, you know, working at Parks and Rec, those outdoor type of jobs put you at higher risk. And, you know, many of them understand that and get that and stay hydrated and take breaks like they should. The other thing that we found when you look at statistics is that each day of the week gets a little bit worse. So by Friday is the peak day for admissions for heat-related illnesses.
Really?
In Phoenix and Tucson. And my working theory, and again, most of these are outdoor occupation people, some recreation people, but mostly outdoor occupation. And my working theory has always been that, you know, as the work week goes on, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, people get progressively dehydrated because you can lose water a lot faster than you can bring it on board. Like when you just drinking a liter of water doesn't mean that water's going to get all the way into your blood and into your cells the way it needs to quickly. So you could get dehydrated a lot faster than it takes, you know, to rehydrate. So my theory is that as people get progressively dehydrated over the work week, they get more and more risk of having, you know, heat stroke, sunstroke, that kind of thing. But over the weekend, they recover. And then by Monday, we found consistently that, you know, Mondays were much lower than Fridays. And I have to believe that has to do with, you know, cumulative dehydration throughout the work week.
Do you need Gatorade or something like Gatorade, or will water do it, do you think?
Water is the best thing. I mean, if you know, some of the sports drinks and stuff are fine too, but people get enough salt and that from just American diets have a lot of salt and stuff in it. So like, you know, there used to be a theory you needed salt pills and stuff like that, but most people get plenty of salt in other ways. So just, and I just drink it right out of the tap. You know, I don't even have bottled water or anything.
Wow. Before we get back into my stack of stuff, there were a couple of things concerning Dr. Walensky, outgoing CDC director. She had an op-ed in the New York Times. We've heard this before. Will U.S. not prepared for the next pandemic? She says the CDC is still using like fax machines and things, really outdated technology. We've really got to upgrade that before the next pandemic. Your thought?
Well, my thought is that while some of that is true, the vast majority of public health work is at the state level. I mean, yes, CDC is an important, you know, place for research and development and providing guidance and so forth. But when it comes to boots on the ground, like who makes decisions and how effective is your public health system, that's really a state by state and even county by county thing.
Yeah.
So I think that op-ed was from the federal perspective, and I don't disagree with her. But I just think that it's a mistake to believe that this response during COVID was primarily driven by CDC or the federal government. They provided resources. They provided the money. They provided some guidance. But the real decision-making, and that was happening with governors and county and state health directors.
All right, coming up next with Will Humble, I want to ask Will what's going on with the Arizona doctor shortage. And for that matter, there's a nurses shortage too here. We'll talk to Will Humble, continuing with our monthly visit with him right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zilkalo Village Studios, looking for a place to cool off. May I suggest, after only about a three-hour drive east to Tucson, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where the elevation is similar to Denver, Colorado. That means it's going to be cooler. If it's 110 in Tucson, my guess, mid-90s over in Silver City. And there, the nights are just absolute. Well, hey, I was right. Thank you, John, for pulling that up on the screen. 93 at midday temps over in Silver City. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org for where to stay, what to do, and some great places to dine as well. We continue now with Will Humble, the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, former director of the Arizona Department of Health. Will has been, and may I add, gladly so, our contributor, our monthly contributor on public health on the Buckmaster Show. Will has been very busy on his Twitter feed and putting out a lot of great information. And he has an interesting little bit about the solution to Arizona's doctor shortage. What is it, Will?
Well, so let me back up a sec. I wrote that piece. You're talking about something I put up on my blog.
On the blog,
yeah. Up here. Yeah, Dr. Crow up here at ASU had a big announcement with the Board of Regents about 2 or 3 weeks ago about how they're going to start a new medical school up here in Phoenix with ASU and going to partner with Mayo up here. And I thought that was a good opportunity to just let everybody know that having more medical students graduate in Arizona is not a key factor in building the inventory of doctors in the state. Hmm. What really is the determining factor are the residencies that and the locations and number of residencies that graduating medical students have opportunities to train in.
Yes.
Because what ends up happening is you graduate from medical school somewhere in the U.S. or even at an international place, and then you need to finish your clinical training, residency, usually 3 years, sometimes more than that, at some location. And doctors end up, they tend to stay and practice in the state and usually in the community where they finish their residency, not where they finish medical school. So if we want to, and we do need to build the number of especially primary care and family medicine physicians in the state, what we really need are more residency slots, not more medical students at a new medical school at ASU. I'm not saying that's going to hurt having a medical school up here. I'm just saying that if we were to focus our resources and money in building more residency locations at, for example, community health centers like El Rio down there has a great clinical training site in family medicine and primary care, and folks who do their residency there tend to stay in Tucson and practice there. And so that's what I think we need to focus more attention on is building more residency locations, especially at like community health center, community-based sites, rather than just, you know, focusing on the number of new graduates from medical school.
Is the nurses shortage still real?
Yes, the nursing shortage is, it was a problem before the pandemic, and it's even worse now because so many of them retired from either burnout or whatever. And so we definitely, I would say it's maybe even more acute statewide than the physician shortage, although the physician shortage is really bad, and especially in the rural parts of the state, specialties and OBGYN and primary care. Yes, the nursing shortage is a problem as well. The interventions there are not necessarily they're not really about more residency sites. It is more about clinical training and getting them, you know, through the university trainings so that they can, you know, get certified as RNs, BSNs, different LPNs, different categories of nurses. And the interventions there are kind of in place.
Let me go back to that. You said, excuse me, Will, residency centers for doctors. Does that mean that a doctor can go to any hospital in Arizona the way it is now, or do they have to be specific resident hospitals?
No, no. So here's what happens to get your license. You graduate from medical school and you're an MD.
Okay.
So you're a medical doctor, but you can't really practice in medicine until you finish your residency and get board certified in something like family medicine, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So that residency piece is key to not just being an MD, but being an MD that can actually is board certified and can practice medicine somewhere.
Okay.
So once you're board certified in something, it's fairly easy to move to a new location and get, for example, admission rights to, you know, Banner, what have you. So the key is building these residency locations, because that's where they end up tending to, that's where they stop and say, okay, I'm going to set roots down here. Not when they finish medical school.
I mean,
where they finish medical school is like, whatever. Now I need to find a residency somewhere. And so that's why I really wanted to press that point, because policy-wise, the residencies are important than having new medical students.
And that makes sense. You know, they come out to wherever it is after they've graduated, and they put down some roots if they're here a couple of years or wherever, and they become a part of the community. So that just makes sense.
Yep. That's where I think we, and this last budget, the state legislature did put $5 million, which isn't a ton. I mean, that sounds like a lot, but when you spread it around the whole state, it's not that much. But $5 million towards building more residency sites like you all have down there at Del Rio.
Okay. And
so that's a good thing.
All right. Over the past couple of months, we've been talking about much needed government reform of the Arizona State Hospital. There was some talk that was actually going to be pushed forward by the legislature. What happened?
There was an amendment. So what you're talking about is the state Arizona Department of Health Services, the state health department, runs the Arizona State Hospital. So it's part of the agency, but they're also the regulator. So their licensing division regulates the state hospital. And it's never a good governance model to have the fox watching the hen house.
No.
It's just too ripe for abuse and conflict of interest. And so for many years, I've believed that we need to separate those functions and have the hospital report to an independent board, and then this health department can regulate that just like they regulate Banner, UNC, whatever. Well, that was sailing through. It was a bipartisan bill to do that work in the Senate, passed 27-2, got over to the House, was not having any trouble at all in the House, and then suddenly at the 11th hour, when it got to the floor of the House of Representatives, there was an amendment by Representative Montenegro that basically stripped it clean.
And what?
Like, if this was Senator Gowan's bill, it just stripped it clean, so it didn't do any of that anymore. All it did in the end, the bill said that nurse practitioners and physician assistants can help with psychiatric assessments.
What?
That's how the, and so the end of the bill, the governor signed the bill, and it says Arizona State Hospital Governance Reform. She signed the bill, and if you didn't know what that was, you'd think that the bill went through.
Mm-hmm.
But the bill was stripped of all the language that did the governance reform, and it only applies to physician assistants doing medical or psychiatric assessments.
So
it, nothing's going to change, in other words, is what I just said. Nothing is going to change. The state health department is still going to run and quote-unquote regulate the Arizona State Hospital, a bad, bad governance model, in my opinion, but something I'm sadly we're going to probably have to live with for the time being and maybe for a few years, sadly.
Real quickly, more opioid settlement money from that big suit. Where will that go, Will? And I've only got about 15 seconds.
Good question. It's unknown yet because the state legislature needs to work and do some appropriation authority to the executive branch. So it's a matter between the Attorney General Mays and the state legislature and the governor to figure out how to allocate that.
Enjoy your swamp cooler. Are you having any trouble finding parts for that swamp cooler?
No, and I can even work on it myself because it's so simple.
All right. Will Humble will be with us next week coming from the Big Apple. Thanks, Will.
All right, take care.
All right. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Will and John, engineering and producing the show, it's Bill Buckmaster here, wishing everyone very well. Have a great afternoon. Remember to stay hydrated. Have a great day.